Welcome to your turn. This is Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us. It's a lousy day here in Washington, cold and rainy, but we've had a beautiful, easy winter so far, so no complaints here. Going to have a good show today. As usual, we're going to follow the money and be talking about things that affect federal workers and retirees. My first guest is Steve Losey. He's a senior writer with the Federal Times, and he's been covering the waterfront on these things. And then at 10:30, we'll be joined by Jessica Clement. She's legislative director for the Federal Managers Association, and she's going to talk us about FMA's agenda and looking at this from the management standpoint. But, Steve, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. Thank you, sir. I hope you're dry. Safe and dry. Hey, got so much stuff to talk about here, but I think I was shipping over some of the emails I was getting this morning to you. And because we mentioned, or in the column, that we're talking about the Roth option coming up sooner rather than later. And there is, as you well know, an awful lot of interest in this. You had an excellent story on the 27th in the Federal Times talking about the education campaign that was beginning for the Roth investment option. Washington Post had one today, very similar, talking about the Roth. And then we had Tom Trabuco on the radio show last week. He's director of external affairs for the TSP, and he spoke at some length about the Roth option, how it's going to work, when it's coming, and then there's some other references to it. So can you give us kind of an overview? How's this going, and what is it?
Sure. This Roth option that the TSP is rolling out, this is a big deal for those guys. They've referred to it as a game changer. Basically, it would change, if you choose it, it would change the way taxes are handled for your retirement planning. Basically, right now for the TSP, you invest money tax-free into an account, and which is then invested into several different funds. And then when you retire, that's when you pay your taxes on your retirement savings. The Roth option would essentially flip that. You would invest under the Roth option, you would invest after-tax earnings into funds that would then grow for years and decades without tax liability. So the big question for federal employees and military service members as they try to decide, is the Roth option right for me? The key question is, what do you think your tax rate in retirement is going to be relative to what you're paying now? Now, for the vast majority of civilian federal employees, the Roth option probably isn't going to be a great help for them because they're likely to pay lower tax rates in retirement than they are now. But for military service members and certain other federal employees, special classes like judges who are likely to pay lower taxes now, the Roth option may be a good idea for them. And the Pentagon, I know, has been pushing hard for this Roth option. So they are definitely interested in it, especially for younger service members.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seemed to me that I would see it more as an age breakdown than even a tax breakdown, because no matter what your tax rate is 10, 15, 20 years down the road, if it's tax-free, that seems to be hard to beat. And for the military people, as you point out, the vast majority of them don't make a career of the military. They don't earn or receive retired military pay pensions, and therefore they're going to be doing something extra in civilian life. So if they start out early and put it in a Roth and then transfer that over when they go into the civilian sector, it seems to be a win-win.
Well, yeah, I think it's important to remember that neither of these options are completely tax-free. It's just, do you pay now or do you pay
exactly
later?
Yes, right. Right. That's right. As you said, it flips it. Here's one from Indiana, and he says, I'm a longtime CSRS civilian worker with low six-figure in the TSP. Retirement horizon is 5 to 7 years. In general terms, does it make sense to convert some or all of a current TSP account to the new Roth? I understand each situation is unique, but I'm in the dark about what factors to consider. Just sign me an Indiana lifer. And I told him that I did not know if we could help him or not, but I would ask you.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if I'm qualified to give investment advice on specific cases. I'm not sure what this gentleman's tax situation is now and would be in the future. Take this with a grain of salt. I imagine it probably might not make sense for that gentleman, but he should probably talk to somebody who's far more qualified than me, a financial planner, an HR person in your agency to get some better advice on whether it's
you know, and in the last couple of weeks, now that I think about it, on the 4-Year Turn show, which is every Monday from 10 to 11 here on WFED 1500 AM, they discuss financial planning, and Bob Lyons is a certified financial planner and a CPA, and they had some other experts on, and they've talked at great length about converting to a Roth IRA. And if you can go on our website and use the search mechanism and look for 4-Year Bennett, the last few recent shows, I think you'll find a lot about how to convert, and it is very complicated, as you say, and neither of us are legally qualified to give advice, even if we were prone to do it. Here's one. I think the answer is yes, but I wanted to run it by you, Steve. From John, and he says, will the CSRS Voluntary Contributions Program be eligible for transfer to the Roth TSP? And I think the answer is yes, but with some caveats.
I am not quite sure about that. Basically, the way the Roth option works is you'll be able to, you know, when it goes live, which is probably going to be April or May, maybe June. They're shooting for the second quarter this year. But anyway, when it goes live, you'll then be able to decide whether you want all your money or part of your money or none of your money to go into the Roth option. And you will be able to make catch-up contributions that are subject to the regular legal limit. That's $5,500 right now. So if you want it doesn't look like you'll be able to take, you know, money that you've already put into TSP and shift it over to a Roth option retroactively. I don't believe that's the case. But if you want to try to get as much money as possible in the Roth as quickly as possible, you might want to hold off on your catch-up contributions until after April or May, whenever it goes live, and then put all $5,500 in the catch-up contributions into a Roth option.
That's good advice. And I remember hearing the 4-Year Benefit Show here on WFED with Bob Lyons, and I remember they discussed the conversion of the so-called voluntary contributions plan. This is something that's available only to CSRS employees. They put money in after taxes, and it's very much like a Roth, but talking about converting it, and I think they've discussed it at length if people would look at it. Steve, here's an interesting one, then we can move on to something else. This is from Steve, says he's an MBA and a CPA, says your readers would be crazy to think that a Roth could grow for years and be withdrawn tax-free. With $15 trillion in national debt and $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities, revenue will be raised by a future Congress by changing the tax code. Think this will not happen? What about all the federal employees who were promised a high 3, fixed contributions to FERS, Social Security supplemental coverage, etc.? Congress will do whatever is necessary to keep this sinking ship afloat. We live in a time of distrust, and nobody should believe anything that the Congress or the administration promises today. And, you know, that's an interesting point, but as you and I were discussing a couple of weeks ago, there have been all these dire threats to federal workers, and I'm not minimizing them, but as he mentioned, the threat of the high 3 to high 5, eliminating the Social Security supplement. They've all been threats, but nothing has happened yet.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing's happened yet for current employees, but as we can get into this a little bit later. But yeah, the contribution rates have been changed for future employees. But yeah, your reader's comment is definitely a good point. None of us have a crystal ball. The debt is growing. The debt is getting worse, and this money's going to have to come from somewhere. Whether increased taxes or very steep spending cuts. So. Yeah, I would say there's no rumblings yet. There's nothing on the horizon that I can see. But who knows? Who knows what could happen in the future?
When Tammy Flanagan, who works for the National Institutes of Transition Planning, she's a former federal HR person with FBI and DEA, when she conducts her pre-retirement seminars now, she always brings with her a letter. And the letter is from an Air Force base in Texas, and it warns people about what's going to happen. And we need to take a short break here, but if you can hang on, there is an interesting bit of mystery here. And we'll be right back on 1500 AM.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPInc.com. That's NITPInc.com for more information.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Hey ladies, I'm Jill Sorensen, Caps beat reporter from Comcast Sportsnet. Want to see hockey from a woman's perspective? Then visit scarletcaps.com to sign up for Club Scarlet for free. Members receive an exclusive newsletter, a chance to win great prizes, and invitations to members-only events, including hockey and heels. Check out scarletcaps.com for the latest blogs and info. To join, log on to scarletcaps.com now.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization. Brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Air Force wants to know if commercial cellular networks might be the way forward for its wireless communication needs. The service is trying to collapse several of its legacy wireless networks that it says are becoming too costly and too cumbersome to operate. The Command and Control Integration Center has just started testing the 4G wireless networks of the four largest national cellular carriers. They're also testing next-generation handheld devices running both Android and Apple's iOS.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio. This show features four of the D.C. region's finest business leaders. Through each of these compelling interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, and opportunities that lie ahead. The show inspires, entertains, and is full of wisdom unheard elsewhere. Tune in Sundays at 9 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio.
Attention federal managers. The Federal Managers Association invites all federal managers, supervisors, and executives to its National Management Training Seminar, Federal Managers Doing More with Less, on Tuesday, March 13th. Federal managers will gather in Arlington, Virginia for practical presentations, including 7 quick fixes for enhancing performance, improving employee productivity and well-being, and decisively addressing conduct-related issues. For more details, visit fedmanagers.org. That's fedmanagers.org.
Welcome back to Your Turn, and we'll end the suspense here. I had a fascinating tale going and ran out of time. But we had a listener who emailed in, and he said, don't be fooled by Congress. They can change. They can and will do anything they want. He's warning about the Roth being eliminated somewhere down the line. And he pointed out to the fact that Congress had promised a high three formula for federal workers, fixed contributions to FERS, Social Security supplement change, etc. And he says Congress will do everything. Anything it can. That may well be true, and certainly they can. They make the laws, and they can unmake the laws. But as I was saying, Tammy Flanagan, benefits expert, starts nearly all of her classes by reading a letter from the Air Force to its employees. And the letter says the Congress is about to change the retirement formula, going from high three to high five. It's about to do a number of other changes, and it warns employees about this and tells them some of them may want to consider retiring now and doing it. The problem is the letter's dated 1991. So this has been around for a long, long time. Steve, you and I have covered it, but we'll continue to cover it. And the only thing I would caution this guy, I'm certainly not shilling for the Roth IRA. I could care less if somebody does it or not. But is it a tremendously good deal for some people? And I would think it would be a mistake to not do something that could be potentially very valuable based on what Congress might do, what it's been threatening to do for 20 years but hasn't done.
So. Yeah, and I think just to make clear, the Roth option has just been was just in the last year or two or last 2 years or so passed by Congress, approved by Congress, and there is no indication at all. No rumblings at all from the Hill right now that they may do away with it or look to tax those earnings. So just wanted to make that clear that there's nothing on the horizon that I can see. But your point is true. You know, anything could happen.
Anything could happen, but it hasn't happened, and we've been through this before. And the other thing too, one of the reasons they did the Roth was to get immediate revenue. Rather than putting money in, as you've said, on a tax-deferred basis, you pay the taxes up front and then you invest it. So from a Treasury immediacy standpoint, a Roth is a better deal for the Treasury than the IRA.
That is true. And, you know, now that I think about it, there's definitely a concern about double taxation.
Yes.
And if people were to put money into a Roth option and then several years down the line, Congress goes, nope, you know what, we're going to tax those. I don't really see how that would fly, especially amongst many of the anti-tax Republicans,
right?
For taxing people's contributions when they put them in and then taxing them again when they withdraw them. That might be dicey.
I could see them eliminating the program, maybe, but not changing it retroactively. That would cause a minor revolution. Hey, want to move on to the retirement backlog. I know you've been tracking that, and I think the last time we talked, you said that OPM had a backlog of about, was it 60,000 applications?
Yeah, 61,000 applications. And, this is a problem that's been it's been around for years, decades, and OPM's been trying to fix it. Basically, they've got 61,000 people right now, as of January, who have retired and are waiting for their full pension. Now, they get a interim pension OPM says sometimes that most of them are in the 80-90% range or so, but some people get much less. And OPM is trying to hire more people, put more people on the problem to make sure these people get their full pensions a lot quicker than they do now. Now it's roughly 5 months or so, some people even more. They want to have the bulk of it in a month or so by next summer. This has been a big problem that the Office of Personnel Management is trying to tackle. It's now getting attention on Capitol Hill. A couple of weeks ago, some lawmakers, senators from Virginia and Maryland, wrote to OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, to try to get them to kind of put the spurs to OPM and make sure this doesn't fall by the wayside again.
Yeah, well, and I think people aren't aware of what a paper-driven process this is, particularly for people retiring now. Computers weren't around when a lot of them started, or the records weren't automated, and it's not just a matter of writing a few codes and getting it done. These documents have to be eyeballed to see if the people's service is correct, if they owe the government money, and compounded that is the fact that the Postal Service last year had this big push to get rid of people. I think you had 21 agencies in 2011 that were offering some form of buyout or early out. And I think currently this year, there are 11 agencies that are offering buyouts with more possibly GSA to come. So the pipeline, the tsunami that has not happened for the last dozen years appears to have suddenly started, huh?
That's right. We saw a 24% increase in retirement applications in 2011. That is just a massive amount of new workload for OPM. And as you mentioned, yes, that is correct. All the buyouts and early outs we saw last year are just kind of piling more work on OPM. I would not be surprised if the same happened this year, and that will complicate their – that's going to complicate OPM's efforts to fix the retirement problem and get it so 60 so most retirees get their full pensions within 60 days of retirement. I misspoke earlier. It's actually they want 60 days, a 60-day deadline to finish processing these pensions.
Yeah, that is very ambitious, even with new people, because I'm looking at some numbers that OPM gave all of us, and they projected in January 2012, just for the month of January, they projected 21,000 new claims, 5,600 in February, 5,000 in March, 8,000 in April, 8,000 in May, 8,000 in June, 8,400 in July. So it's sort of going up again. These are huge numbers with a backlog of 61,108. So the bottom line is if you're going to retire anytime soon, you better have a nest egg, huh?
That's right. You better have several months' worth of cash on hand, you know, enough to be able to pay your mortgage, keep gas in your car, pay for food and other expenses, pay your electric bill. Because I've spoken to a lot of people over the last, you know, 2 years or so who have had to dip into their TSPs or withdraw money that they had been hoping to save for the twilight years. And you don't want to start pulling money out of the TSP before you're ready to. You want to make sure you have enough cash on hand to get yourself through those first couple of rocky months while OPM gets you your full pension. Now, you do get reimbursed for the months that you were underpaid, but that can take 5 months, 6 months.
That means paying your brother-in-law for all those loans, too,
that you had to make.
Yeah.
And it's worth noting that when you do get reimbursed, they don't pay you interest.
Okay.
So that's money that you would lose.
Very good. Hey, National Treasury Employees Union is having its legislative conference this week. Tough weather for them out there.
Yeah, they're having a rally today.
What's going on there?
They've got several hundred of their members in town for their legislative conference. They had a meeting yesterday. They opened up the legislative conference where they kind of rallied the troops. They're planning to go to hit Capitol Hill today and fan out and talk to lawmakers about their concerns. Primarily, they want to end the pay freeze that's been going on, and they want to just quash any talk about further cutting federal retirement benefits. And there's also some discussions that I found interesting. They are really pushing members to donate to their political action committee, the TPAC, Treasury Employees Political Action Committee, to try to so they can use that money, which is separate. It should be noted is separate from union donations because they're union dues. That is because they're legally prohibited from using union dues to pay for political efforts. But they want to steer money towards Senate campaigns primarily that where they think they can have an effect. They want to get rid of lawmakers who are hostile to federal employees or have voted for cutting pay or cutting benefits or freezing pay, and they want to support lawmakers who are friendly to federal interests.
And also on the postal front too, it seems like every day a new wound opens up in the Postal Service. What's happening there?
Well, last week they announced plans to close or consolidate 223 mail processing plants, and that's going to slash the size of its mail processing network nearly by half and cut 35,000 jobs. It's going to be a big change for the Postal Service. There are almost certain to be buyouts and early outs. There may be some reductions in force, some RIFs, layoffs. So this is part of their network optimization plan that they say they hope is going to save more than $2 billion a year. So and as far as what it's going to mean for postal customers, it's going to mean the end of the next-day delivery standard for first-class mail. So it's going to take – instead of the next day, it's going to take two days, 3 days, who knows, maybe more, to get your letter to where it's going.
And the president has called for five-day delivery, correct?
That's right. The president has now agreed to support five-day delivery, and the Postal Service has been pushing to end Saturday delivery for some time. So, the Postal Service that we knew for years and years and years, it's not going to exist in that same form. There are going to be changes coming to the U.S. Postal Service.
Talking to an old uncle, he remembers two deliveries a day, if you can believe it. But
wow.
Listen, thank you, Steve Losey from Federal Times, for being here with us. We'll talk to you next week. And meanwhile, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk with Jessica Clement from the Federal Managers Association.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around a mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
There are some incredibly sophisticated capabilities that can be unleashed in this commons called cyberspace that you will not be able to anticipate and you won't see coming. So part of your plan is to defend, part of your plan is to mitigate, and part of your plan is to recover.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target, exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview.
Yeah.
And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
On Wednesday, an extra leap day is added to our calendar. Most of us won't give it much thought, but calendar precision has been important to human civilization and may become a hot topic again. Earth's daily rotation isn't linked to its orbit around the sun, which takes a bit longer than 365 days. So Jason Cassabry, a University of Alabama engineer, says here in the northern hemisphere,
if you didn't account for that extra quarter day plus change, then eventually January 1st would actually be in the summertime.
We've pretty well fixed things by adding leap days here on Earth, but Cassabry's working on getting to other planets and says such calendar adjustments
might become more important again, because then you have to start worrying about, well, if people are living on Mars, what calendar are they going to go by?
As he works on deep space travel issues, though, Cassabree says,
having that extra day just gives me an extra day to get work done.
Find out more at www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey, appreciate you being with us today. And a reminder that we are archived on our homepage and all of the shows we've done. So if you want to listen to this one or recommend it to a friend, and if you want to go back a couple of shows, when Tom Trabuco from the Thrift Investment Board was on, he talked at great length about the Roth option that's coming possibly as early as April or May to the Thrift Savings Plan. So glad to have you with us. And my guest in studio bravely came up here in the rain, 40 minutes from Alexandria to here, Jessica Clements. She is legislative director for the Federal Managers Association. Jessica, welcome. Thank you for making it in.
Thank you for having me.
And boy, I know you're frantic now because you have your national legislative conference coming up March, which is tomorrow.
Yep, our annual lobbying day is actually 2 weeks from today. It is the final day of our three-day conference, our annual conference here in D.C. We start on Monday, March 12th, I apologize. And our first day is all internal business. We have elections. I give them an update on what we're doing in the national office legislatively. We talk about our legislative agenda. Tuesday, we have an annual day of training, which is open to all managers and supervisors across the government. We have a great dynamic day of training, all focused on the theme, doing more with less. It's six different panels. And then Wednesday is our annual lobbying day, where our folks take our 2012 agenda up to the Hill.
Okay, and so anybody, whether they're a FMA member or not, if you're in grades what?
Well, I mean, it's really if you manage people or programs.
Okay.
So that's kind of what we're looking for.
Okay, so anybody, can they just walk in?
You can register online at our website. It's www.fedmanagers.org. We encourage you to do so just so we can make sure we have enough lunch plates and breakfast for everybody. I think it's also important to note that our keynote address that morning is by OPM Director John Barry. He's been a huge champion of federal employees, and there's a lot going on throughout the federal government and OPM specifically, so I'm really excited to hear what he has to say to our members.
Yeah, we live in interesting times.
That we do.
As the Chinese curse / proverb says, speaking of interesting times, you're the legislative director, so you know what's going on. Can you run down the list? What's in the weather forecast?
Well, I feel like this week has been at least relatively quiet compared to weeks, you know, months past, the last year, in fact. I think Steve hit on a lot of the hot topics right now. I think the person who emailed you wondering, you know, saying, hey, Congress can change this at any time, I think he's absolutely right. We are going to constantly battle changes to the retirement and further pay freezes, possible pay cuts. You never know what's going to come out of this Congress, and I think we should be prepared for anything.
People seem to be concerned most, if that's a fair statement, about the change from the high three formula to the high five. A lot of people don't know that at one point it was high five in the federal government, and pretty standard in the private sector from those few remaining outfits that have annuities. What's the threat there? What's the big deal to 2 years?
Well, if you ask me, if I'm a betting person, which I'm not, but if I was, I wouldn't put much money on that one.
Okay.
And I say that because it is a very small change. I know it elicits fear in your listeners, my members, high three to high five, and I think it's because it's easily understandable. If I said to you, Mike, we're going from a high three to high five, you could probably calculate what that meant for you in retirement. But when you do that, for the average federal employee, it's a very small amount, maybe a couple $100 a year. And a lot of retirement experts say that you can make that up with an extra 6 months of service or so. So that being the case, on the saving side for Congress, when they're looking at things like deficit reduction and preventing sequestration, that doesn't actually save them a lot of money. So I think that that is a possible scenario, but say less likely than changing the percentage that goes into the retirement fund from your paycheck.
Obviously, because that's an immediate to the Treasury, and they've done it prospectively. So right now, it's only for people who joined FERS after December 31st of this year,
correct?
So 2013, but they could as somebody pointed out, Congress can do anything. They make the laws, and they could impose this on current federal workers. What would that mean under the schemes that are out there?
Well, right now there is a standalone bill which would increase federal employee contributions. There's a few of them. You know, the president requested 1.2% increase in his budget for FY13. There's other proposals on the Hill that would be 1.5%. And like you said, that's immediate. You know, if you make that effective January 1, 2013, that's money that's going into the Treasury on that day.
And the fact that, and does the president's proposal, would that be current employees?
Yes, it would.
It would. Okay, so that's
the president's proposal was only prospective in terms of the FERS annuity supplement. He eliminated the FERS annuity supplement, but only for new hires, no current hires. No current employees.
Now, that annuity supplement, that's another thing that gets people fighting mad. Because
and it should.
You're talking big bucks there,
big,
aren't you?
Big bucks. Yes, I've heard from a lot of our members, especially ones who transitioned from CSRS to FERS because of that provision. You know, they sat down, they did the math, they knew they were going to spend their career with the federal government, and they said, you know, hey, I like this TSP thing, but, you know, that has a certain amount of risk to it. So this FERS annuity supplement allows me, you know, a guaranteed income should I retire at, say, 57 with 35 years of service. That's not an unreasonable amount of service for some of these guys. And now you're talking about eliminating it, and that can be upwards, I've heard from people, you know, $75,000 over the course of the years.
Several
until
years.
They hit 62.
Yeah, I guess for FERS people, it would virtually eliminate, quote, early retirement, mm-hmm. that is before age 62. And the deal is, and correct me if I'm wrong, you used the example of 57. I think the average federal worker now retires, they're either late 58 or early 59, but it's earlier than most people in the private sector. So if you retired at 59, for argument's sake, right now they get a supplement because they're not eligible yet for Social Security. So they get a supplement from the government that makes up for that payment, and it can be substantial. It could be $8,000, $9,000, $10,000,
$15,000
a year.
It can be.
If they made this change, eliminated the supplement, then if I retired at 59, my annuity would reflect that, and mm-hmm. I wouldn't get anything from Social Security until I hit age 62.
And I think there's two important things that we need to keep in mind. When Congress created FERS, they took into account this provision. So this provision is funded. It's not like, oh, we can't afford this. You absolutely can, because it was taken into account when FERS was created. The other thing that makes me incredibly nervous about eliminating this provision is that it would affect anyone who takes a buyout or early out from their agency. I mean, you and Steve were talking earlier about all the agencies that are offering buyouts and early outs to their employees. Where is the incentive to take one if you're a FERS employee before the age of six, you know, under the age of 62, if you're not going to receive this? You've essentially eliminated the incentive for taking a buyout.
Now, there was also, I know, talk last year, and we have, I guess, have to go back a little ancient history. There were blue ribbon panels appointed by the White House. There were joint congressional mm-hmm. executive branch panels. There was the Bowles-Simpson Commission. There was the Super Committee, mm-hmm. and they all came up with recommendations, or a variety of recommendations,
right.
But nothing happened. So they're still floating out there.
Right. And a lot of people use the recommendation of the Simpson-Bowles Commission as a reason to do certain things.
Yeah.
Simpson-Bowles wanted a 3-year pay freeze. So when legislators introduce an additional year of the pay freeze, they say, well, the president's own commission recommended this. They failed to notice that those recommendations failed.
Right. Right. Well, what are some of those out there? Because I know we were talking one point about changing the measure, changing the ruler, mm-hmm. if you will, that decides how large a cost of living adjustment federal, military, and Social Security
right.
retirees get.
Well, they're, by law, federal employees are to receive the employment cost index -0.5% unless Congress decides otherwise. And, of course, they did that with the 2-year pay freeze. And then the other thing on the Social Security side that you need to be worried about is going from the current the COLA calculation to a changed CPI, which saves billions upon billions of dollars, but substantially lessens the Social Security benefits that everyone receives, not just feds, you know, everyone who receives Social Security. You know, that's the two biggest pieces in terms of the COLA where Congress could go.
Okay, I want to deal with that in a second. We need to take a short break here on 1500 AM. Be right back.
What is the U.S. Department of Energy's human capital and workforce strategy? How is energy tackling the human capital challenges it's facing? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Michael Caine, Chief Human Capital Officer with the U.S. Department of Energy. That's this week on the Business of Government Hour.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov. Brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Peter Bosch, Medical Director, Ambulatory EHR and Health IT Policy, MedStar Health, commented during the panel discussion titled Electronic Health Records 2.0, What Does the Future Hold? Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
The biggest game changer is get the healthcare system and payment right. Get those aligned, and if we get those aligned, the health IT will follow.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. Electronic health records can offer benefits for patients, providers, and payers, but have not yet realized their full potential. Booz Allen Hamilton believes the next 5 to 10 years will see vast changes in the EHR environment. As mobile health applications proliferate, information is more readily shared, and EHRs take on a key role in delivering high-quality patient-centered health care. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that Geico isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how Geico actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, Geico saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like Geico. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. Geico.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact Geico today to request your special federal savings.
Human Capital Management for Defense is a highly anticipated training conference with over 300 delegates and key speakers, such as Lieutenant General Daryl D. Jones, Deputy Chief of Staff for Manpower, Personnel and Services, U.S. Air Force, Honorable Thomas R. Lamont, Assistant Secretary of the Army, Manpower and Reserve Affairs, and Honorable Juan M. Garcia, Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Manpower and Reserve Affairs. This year's event will be held on March 12th through the 15th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. For more info, visit hcmdusa.com. Mention code FNR for a 25% discount.
Tired of playing catch up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey. I'm talking with Jessica Clement. She is a legislative director for the Federal Managers Association, and they're having their national legislative session on March 11th, and going to have John Berry, director of OPM, as the keynote speaker. And usually an interesting day, and you have a training day that's open to anybody if you register, and you want them to register online so you'll know how much food to have. It's simple as that.
Yeah, make sure we have enough chairs in the room. I'm really excited for our training day this year. We have six different panels, so you can't get bored. They're short. And then we move on to the next one, and they're all focused around the theme doing more with less, because I think that's on the forefront of managers and supervisors' minds right now. Their higher ups are telling them we got to eliminate a position in your department, but we also need you to do not only your job, but now X, Y, and Z, because we just let that guy go, or we just offered that guy a buyout. And how do you manage during these times? How do you keep your employees motivated at a time when Congress is constantly attacking their pay and benefits? How do you, as a manager, stay motivated and keep up morale in your agency? So we have these panels all focused around doing more with less, and I really think that's going to speak to a lot of managers and supervisors right now in the government.
Well, I've been lucky most of my life, because except for the Army and the National Guard when I was a buck sergeant, I really haven't had to manage any people. I did have one employee one time that I had to manage, and she scared me to death. So that was not much of a problem for her. Both of my sons have been managers of large groups of people. One still is. And they say that it's the toughest part of their job. The project is one thing, but it's actually dealing with people, coping with people, and the managers see things that the rest of us don't. What's on FMA's agenda? What are managers worried about that maybe others aren't?
Well, I think you bring up a good point. Every manager and supervisor in the federal government has managerial duties they need to carry out as part of their job, but a lot of their agencies don't give them time to do that. In addition to managing, they also have their regular job duties that they need to get done. And I hear from my members a lot, OPM talking about quarterly reviews. How do we find time for quarterly reviews? And it's like, well, your agency needs to show you that managing is important, and they value you managing your employees and making sure your employees are happy and communicating effectively. So I think the biggest question on managers' minds right now is the how. How do I both manage and do my job?
Well, and these things like annual reviews, if you have a sizable staff, that's a problem in and of itself.
It's definitely a challenge. And, one of our training days, speakers from the FAA is going to come in and talk about finding opportunities through challenges. I think that's going to be a really important session for our members as they are losing staff but increasing their workload.
Now, we have these within-grade raises that I think a lot of people, even in government, are not familiar with them. But you come in at the step one of a grade, usually, and for the first three years, I'll get it right, every year you get a within-grade raise if you perform satisfactorily. That's a 3% pay raise in addition to maybe anything else you'll get. In the next 3 years, you get an increase, again, 3% every 2 years if you perform satisfactorily. And then in the last three steps, you get a raise every 3 years, again, assuming satisfactory performance, until you bump up to the top of grade at 9. About a 30% differential in those grades. So they're worth a lot to people, and many people don't think about them. Congress obviously forgot about them when they did the pay freeze. President Jimmy Carter's staff called those raises being there raises, and that was based on the Peter Sellers movie about a sort of happy, cheerful incompetent who went through life and he just showed up and good things happened to him. And they call those raises being there raises because all you do is show up. From the management standpoint, do you think government workers are rated correctly?
I think I'm probably not in a position to answer that question. Mm-hmm. I think if you talk to 10 managers and supervisors at 10 different agencies, you're going to get 10 different answers. But I think it's important to note that Congress views these raises as automatic, like you said, being their raises, but they are supposed to be based on performance, and managers have the tools to deny those raises should the employee not be deserving of one.
Yeah. Well, I've heard it both ways. You're right. Some people say it's not worth going after a poor performer. Mm-hmm. They'll sue you, or they'll allege some kind of discrimination, you know, age, sex, race, what have you. So it's not worth it, not worth the hassle. Others have said, no, if the top management backs you up, it can be done. And I think one of the arguments about government as opposed to other places is the fairly long probation period in government. Is it still 3 years?
It's a year.
Year, okay. Even that's a pretty long time.
And then your career conditional for 3 years, which I guess means, you know, if agencies are offering buyouts, those career conditional folks will probably be the first ones to go. But you're only on a probationary period where you can be relieved without cause for 1 year. But you can also appeal that decision.
Yeah. Well, I've heard people say that because of that relatively long period where they can come in and not like the kind of tie you're wearing and you're out of there, that that's where they weed out most of the bad apples.
I don't have the statistics on how many actually, you know, are let go during their probationary period. But the concern of a lot of my managers is actually the opposite. Especially in places like the IRS and Social Security, our members manage employees who have to have very technical specialized skills. And in order to get those skills, they have to go through several months of training, sometimes upwards of a year of training, and then 2 to 3 years of on-the-job training in addition. They don't feel the 1 year period is long enough to evaluate those folks.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. What else is on the legislative agenda that worries you? I know there you have a Republican budget. You have the Congressman Ross is looking at it. Congressman Issa is looking at it.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now. FMA took kind of a different approach, which is the legislative agenda for 2012. Given the nature of Congress and the almost weekly attacks on federal employee pay and benefits, we thought it was important from an FMA standpoint to tell Congress why the damaging proposals that they're putting forth are in fact damaging. So they're, you know, on the forefront of our legislative agenda this year. I expect our folks on Wednesday, March 14th to go up to the Hill and inform their members of Congress what they do. I think the reason federal employees are such easy pickings for Congress is because Congress doesn't understand what they do. You know, there's this sense that all federal employees are Washington bureaucrats who live within the Beltway, and that's just false. And I'm looking forward to our members going up there and telling them, you know, hey, this is what I do in your state, in your district, for our local economy. And why are you taking out the budget problems on me? And I think our annual lobbying day is a great way for our members to educate members of Congress as to the work, the great work they do in their districts.
I think it's interesting that we as human beings, we may be as a breed, as a group, don't like certain things. Maybe lawyers, maybe reporters, maybe, you know, people in the media. And yet they identify very strongly with people that they know, or maybe who are a neighbor, or they know what they're doing. And is that what you're kind of hoping for?
Right.
Put a human face on the federal workforce?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one member of Congress actually said to one of the federal employee groups, I don't have any federal employees in my district. Mm. That is the mindset in congressmen. Now, this is how ignorant they are to what federal employees do, where they even live. The fact that of course he has federal employees in his district or retirees. Every congressional district does. And I think that's why it's easy for members of Congress to go, sure, freeze their pay for another 2 years. That's going to save me almost $30 billion.
I remember a while back, a member of Congress who obviously didn't like federal workers referred to, I think, ATF agents as jackbooted thugs jumping around. And it really, you know, it had tones of Nazism, about a year later, a couple of those jackbooted thugs in the form of what Capitol Hill policemen saved his life, and one of them was killed in the process. Some people rushed in, were going to go for his office, and they stopped him. So sometimes you need to personalize it, yeah, I guess.
It changes your perspective pretty quickly, doesn't
it? Very good. Thank you, Jessica Clement, for coming in the rain. We'll
see you
here next week. Have a good week. Be careful, and talk to you Wednesday.